jobs thing there.
Oh, okay.
Die down, but they'll always expand.
We better not.
Different times, just be ready. Same state.
Poor Southwest Minnesota.
I hope the weather's all right for the flight. I don't like this.
We don't have corn, but so.
Ah, so did I.
Better than walking, but I don't like them either.
All right, today is January 26, 2011. Senate Finance Committee will come to order. Let the record show we do have a quorum. We have before us today Senate File 60. Senator Roebling, would you like to begin presenting your bill for the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate File 60 is a first bill to work with the budget reductions that are going to be necessary this session in order to balance our budget. As you all know, we have a projected $6.2 billion budget deficit that we have to deal with for the next fiscal cycle. And in order to do that, we first of all decided that we want to continue the legislative reductions that were made in 2010. And so this bill moves forward those reductions and puts them in a permanent position so that we make permanent cuts in areas that were temporarily cut in our budget last year. And we have been trying to stay as close to those cuts as possible. Plus, it also has a provision in it that asks Minnesota Management and Budget to try and find any funds that are left over. We would like to capture those funds and make sure that they, if they're not encumbered, they're not spent yet in the end of this fiscal year, which ends on June 30th, that we would be able to use those to help us with next year's budget deficit as well. And it would also help potentially improve our cash flow situation. So we are asking them to assist us with this process as they are the overseers of the agency budgets. I do have an author's amendment that I would like to offer. We were in the tax committee yesterday with Senate File 82, which was all of the tax portions of this bill. It received a thorough vetting in there. There were amendments made, and that is part of the author's amendment. I would like to replace the current tax section with the new one, and with the article that came from the Senate Tax Committee yesterday. And then there are also some changes in our numbers. This has been a work in progress, and we have reduced the amount that we're asking MMB to find for us for the end of the fiscal year. We have reduced it from $200 million to $125 million. And we have also made some reductions in the Health and Human Services cuts so that they truly are more in line with the reductions that were made in 2010. So that was about $25 million for the biennium that we reduced the cuts. And so I think that our Senate counsel, Tom Bodern, is prepared to sort of walk through this author's amendment with us.
Senator Roebling, would you like us to adopt the amendment first, or would you like to have Senate staff walk through that first?
I think I would like to have Senate counsel walk through it first.
Mr. Chairman, first, and Senator Roebling, I want to make sure we have the A3 amendment distributed. I'm not sure has everyone received a copy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can walk you through very quickly where you can find the items Senator Roebling was referred to, and then I think if we want to go into further detail in some of these areas, it may be necessary to talk to the fiscal analysts involved. But if you look at the first page of the A3 amendment, the changes you see from line 1.2 to 1.13 are the changes in the Health and Human Services area that reduce the amount of the cuts and I think eliminate some of them altogether. For example, if you look at page 1, line 13, you'll see that the state-operated services for adult mental health services cut is eliminated entirely. Then beginning on line 14 of page 1 of the amendment, you see the changes to the fiscal year 2011 reductions. The big number there is, of course, reducing the $200 million to $125 million. And then there's some detail provided beginning on page 1 line 16, there is a list of items that may not be included in the reductions that the Commissioner of Management and Budget is directed to make. I won't go through each of the programs, but it includes some veterans programs and some disaster relief. Those funds would be left off the table for the 2011 reductions. Then at the very bottom of page one of the amendment, there are specific numbers provided for the reductions to the legislature and the constitutional officers. Those dollar amounts are shown there. And I will also point out that does not include the any cuts to the governor's office. Beginning on page two of the amendment, that's where you'll see the remainder of the amendment is articles 4 and 5 as they were passed by the tax committee yesterday.
All right, members. Senator Roebling moves the A3 amendment as an author's amendment to bring the bill in the order she would like it. Is there any discussion? Senator Goodwin?
Could you go over a little bit more? All I just heard is that Article 4 was added yesterday, but I don't know what it does here yet. So can you tell me what it does?
Do you want me to explain it? Actually, the LGA cuts that were proposed in there are still intact. They're the same. There was issues related to federal conformity for income tax purposes that were added in the committee yesterday. Those included, just pull this up, the provision that would extends the income tax exclusion for health insurance to benefits for adult children up to age 26, increases exclusion for adoption expenses which impact calendar year 2010, and increases Section 179 expensing amounts for tax year 2011 and other increased depreciation amounts that help businesses. And those are to comply with federal changes in law, and it would we're trying to expedite this because it does affect the income tax filings that people will be making right now. In addition to that, there was some discussion about the forestry program, that the sustainable forest program, and we did change that to put a cap on the payment that can be made to the participants in the program of $100,000. And the cap had been removed, and we put it in place again for $100,000. The amount in the bill that was proposed per acre was discussed but was retained at $775 per acre. So those were mainly the changes in the tax committee.
Are there any other questions, any discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the A3, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, sorry, before we proceed with that, Senator Bonoff, I'm sorry, I missed you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Roebling, could you say something about the market value credit? Were you talking about that? The changes to the market value credit program?
No. In the A3? Senator Bonoff, I don't believe we changed any numbers in the market value credit.
In the A3, there's a section on the market value credit, and I'm just wanting to make sure I understand the market value credit reimbursement.
We'll have our staff analysts help us.
Is this the bill that we have? Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff,
Could you please state your name for the record?
I'm sorry. Jack Paulson, Senate Counsel and Research.
Thank you.
As amended in Senate file, in our the A-3 amendment, as was adopted in Tax Committee yesterday, the market value credit will be the lesser of the amount for payable 2010 after cuts or the 11. If that, whichever is less of those two.
Senator Bonoff.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Paulson, so how is that different than what was in the previous bill? What was some of the discussion? I didn't have a chance to see that with regard to why that change was made like that.
Chair and Senator Bonoff, the bill as it came in, basically it carried forward the amounts that had been, the changes that had been made in Chapter 215. And this is a different approach. The distribution is a little different. And the total amounts of the reduction are about, I think, $4 million higher for counties and about $1 million higher for cities.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Paulson, in the amended version?
As in the version as it was approved by the Tax Committee yesterday, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions, any other discussion before we adopt the author's amendment? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion is adopted. So, Senator Oebling, would you now like to walk through some of these sections?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would. As I mentioned, this is a first effort to help reduce our budget deficit for the upcoming fiscal biennium. And it actually reduces the structural deficit by over $500 million, and it calls for $125 million in additional state government reductions for the remainder of the two-year budget cycle, and we would try to recapture the unspent money. And then it requires the legislature and constitutional officers to also make a contribution to that and help lead by example, and we do have figures in there for proposed cuts for those areas. In addition, it eliminates the political contribution refund. This is a continuation from last year, and we've all made it through a campaign cycle without that refund. I remember hearing when it was announced that it was going to be eliminated, I thought this is going to be difficult to raise campaign funds. And myself, I was, you know, sad to see it go. But quite frankly, I think we survived quite well. I think we found out that people are still willing to contribute to our campaigns, even if they don't get that first $50 refunded from the state. It also has a cap on the sustainable forest payments. And this was an issue that received quite a bit of discussion in Tax Committee yesterday, because the Department of Revenue was planning a correction in this area anyway. There had been changes made in the law previously that resulted in an unintended large payment increase. It actually doubled the payment increase from eight something an acre to almost $16 an acre in 1 year. And there was a letter sent out when that check was issued this year that would not likely be continued. So the people, there's 1,700 landowners enrolled in that program, and they were already notified that they could not expect the same size of a payment that had unexpectedly come to them in this current payment. And so we have rolled that back and capped it at a per acre amount instead of having a formula for it right now. There's some discussion that maybe that amount could be stabilized for a couple years, and then we could look at a new formula, another way to figure out or just increase the per acre amount as the years go by, so there is some slight increase in that. But facing the current deficit that we have, we're trying to leave it at the per acre amount right now. Also, we have in here the renter's credit adjustment. We had adjusted that at 15%. It's for the renter's credit property tax refund. And it had been 19%, and we're bringing it back down to 15%, which is where it was last year. There's one little glitch in there in that because current law stated that it was going to go back up to 19%, the tax forms that went out with the tax packets have it at 19%. So any additional forms that are printed and dispersed for this, if this passes, would have to have the new percentage rate in. Otherwise, it would have to be recalculated at the 15% rate. This is something that isn't due until August, actually. These refund forms don't need to be submitted until then. And then a note would be sent out with their checks explaining the change in the formula for the refund. This also continues the local government aid freezes, and it actually has the amount that they received last year will be the amount that they would receive this year. So then we are slightly going off the formula. And I was just, when you asked about the market credit, I wasn't thinking about that. I was just thinking about dollar amounts. And so it does change that a little bit. We're still contemplating if that is the best way to go. We've been going back and forth. As you can see, we had it in originally to stay on the formula. And then cities and counties that were trending upward in their local government aid would continue to trend upward. Others would be trending downward. They'd continue to trend downward. But we thought it might be easiest and cleanest if we just said it's a dollar amount. It's the same amount you received last time. And so we put that in. There's still some discussion going on. There's still a little flexibility there that we might change that. In the higher ed area, we continue the dollar reductions that we had last year, and it's both for MinSCU and the U of M. In the health and human services areas, we continue the reductions, and as mentioned when we were doing the author's amendment, we did remove some of the planned reductions in the original bill so that we really have them lined up more with the reductions that were in current law. That were temporary, but that had been approved by the legislature in the past. Those reduction areas include child and community service assistant grants, emergency general assistance, and the continuation of the 4.5% for basic care services. And then also I wanted to mention that there's no additional reductions to general education programs or special education programs.
Senator Brigley, we have a question over here. Senator Brigley?
Yes.
So is there still a reduction in general assistance?
Senator Brigley?
There is still a reduction in general assistance. And for more information, we have Dennis Albright right here, who maybe could give us a little more information on where we took those cuts from.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, my name is Dennis Albrecht. I'm the fiscal analyst for Health and Human Services. The reduction that is in this bill for general assistance is still, as it was in the original bill, to only the emergency general assistance portion of that program. And that's true also for the emergency MSA program.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Albrecht, so originally, the dollar amount indicated there would be a cut to general assistance. Is that no longer in the bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, the change is to the appropriation for the general assistance program because the emergency general assistance program is part of that appropriation.
Right, but is it just eliminating the general assistance, emergency assistance, or does it eliminate some appropriation for the general assistance grants? I'm not sure I can make my question any clearer.
Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, it does not reduce the amount for the general assistance program, and it no longer eliminates the portion for the emergency general assistance program.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Albrecht, then I'm confused about what does it eliminate.
Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, it doesn't eliminate anything. It just reduces the amount of funding in the forecast for the emergency general assistance portion of the general assistance program.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Albrecht, and by what percent is the emergency assistance reduced?
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, it is 10.4%.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, the
yesterday was the Disability Day at the Capitol, and so many of us had constituents come and see us. And one of the things that I heard repeatedly is people talked about the need for more flexibility with regard to the CCSA money, that they wanted to be able to, with some concern about cuts, they wanted to be able to have more flexibility over using those dollars in different ways. In this budget bill, was there any thought about that? Is that going to be considered in a different section of policy?
Thank you, Senator Bonifan and Mr. Chair. I do know that Senator Hahn will likely be taking a look at those areas. I know that there's a belief among many that there may be some additional savings that could be incurred by giving people more flexibility, by letting them make some common sense choices for themselves. And I do believe that that will be something that Senator Hahn will take up in the Health and Human Services Committee during the session.
Senator Hahn, to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Roebling and Senator Bonhoff, to your question. My understanding of this bill is that we are not changing any policies with respect to any of the programs. We're just talking about the appropriations for the different programs. But Senator Roebling is correct, and it is our intention in the committee to look at the programs that we have with a view of trying to create maximum flexibility. I think that your point that you're making is a good one. It's one that I'm in agreement with, that I would much rather see us use funds that we have and give the flexibility to use them appropriately where they're closest to being spent. So I'm not sure, we haven't got to the point of outlining exactly how we will do those things, but that is my intention, to look at ways that we can accomplish that. But my understanding with this bill is that we're not trying to do anything in policy to make any changes. It's just reducing the forecasted appropriations consistent with what we did last year.
And Mr. Chair, because I wasn't on that committee last year and so hadn't gotten a chance to look at this, I wonder if perhaps even Senator Berglund would have some explanation of what this cut then. What did it cut with regard to that program?
Senator Berglund, to that.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is this is a 30% cut to this program. This program pays counties or allows counties to spend money on children's mental health, out-of-home placement, and a variety of other things, but I think those are the two largest areas that the money is spent on by the counties. You know, I don't see how you get more efficiencies in those areas that you can make those dollars go further. In fact, you know, with the economy the way it is, we're seeing more need for child protection intervention, not less.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
With our changes, it's about a 21% cut, and I believe that it's 21% of the state portion of this pool, and there is quite a bit of other money that comes in from the federal government for it as well. If I'm correct, if we're talking about the same one, we're kind of a small player in the bigger pool of this. In fact, is it? I'm thinking that we were 13 to 14% of the total amount, and then this is about a 21% cut of our share. I'm getting a nod from Mr. Albright.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important for people to understand the reason that this was cut on a one-time basis last year was because the federal government did provide additional revenue in this area. Just as the state got additional Medicaid funding through FMAP, there was additional money in that appropriation that went directly to the counties to give them a higher percentage of federal funding for out-of-home placement. But that was never intended to be permanent. And so to characterize this as a continuation of a cut made by the legislature last session, I think, is erroneous. It was to take advantage of federal funding to make sure the services would remain level, but not to see a reduction in services. And this bill will reduce children's services. There is no doubt about it.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, let me ask relative to the cut in the Department of Corrections. As I understand the amendment, you've excluded $12 million in the unencumbered funds from the Facilities Division of Corrections. Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Senator Cohen.
So what do you understand the Facilities Division to be?
Can I explain this portion of the bill? This is in the section where we are asking the MMB to find $125 million in order to help, just to capture that, to help with next year's budget deficit. So they gave us a list of money that had been unexpended, and it came up to about $194 million. And so we looked at that list and said we assume that they will be picking things off of here because this is money that has not been encumbered yet. And as we looked at it, we decided that there were some things that we really didn't want them to have to go in and cut. And one of them was the corrections area. They had $12 million in there that had been set aside but had not been encumbered. There was no bills for it yet, and it was for repairs and projects that they might have to undertake before the end of the fiscal year. And we decided to leave them with that money. In addition to that, on that list were things for the flood relief grants that were unspent yet, military and veterans areas, the higher education grants, and we just put them off limits for those cuts.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling.
Senator Cohen.
No, I understand that, and that's very clear in the face of the bill, or the amendment, as to where you found some unintended consequences of what your original bill was in terms of, you know, the tuition reimbursement, because I couldn't believe, Senator Roebling, that you were going to get rid of the tuition reimbursement for the National Guard. So you did a good job in that regard in trying to clean this up. But that's what I'm asking in particular about corrections, because there's still, according to the spreadsheet that was distributed to us, there's still a balance for Senate File 60 of approximately $11 million in the Department of Corrections. You've excluded $12 million, I think, from facilities, and that's why I'm wondering if you can give me the particularities of what's in facilities. For instance, I know facilities would be maintenance, some of the grounds operations, and so on. I'm not sure, but I don't think it includes food. I don't think it includes overtime. I don't think it there are other areas. So I don't know if Mr. Lundin can help, or there's Mr. Turner. I was actually looking for Mr. Turner.
Senator Roebling. Okay. Yeah, we have some information
staff
here.
Staff back up here.
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Chris Turner, fiscal analyst for the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. And I got this information yesterday. The $12 million in unencumbered in the Facilities Division consists of fuel and utilities, that would be heat, water, and sewer, repair and replacement of plant maintenance costs for fixing toilet sinks, et cetera, and personal offender support, paper towels, linen, clothing, et cetera.
Okay. So Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I was correct in terms of what kind of the general definition of the facilities provision. So what about the rest of the unencumbered monies within corrections? What are they to be used for, potentially?
Senator Roebling?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, we are not saying they have to be cut. We are giving MMB the authority to look for places that it would make sense to cut, but we are taking some things off the table. We're just saying don't look there. But they have a wide array of things that they can potentially choose from.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, I understand perfectly. I'm inquiring of Mr. Turner, though, for the sake of the hypothetical, if management budget in arriving at its $125 million went after the rest of the unencumbered corrections money, what would that money be utilized for, hypothetically?
Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, this $12 million is approximately 3.5% of the facility budget.
I'm not talking about the $12 million that's excluded. I'm talking about the money that still is within the budget. The spreadsheet suggests that there's a balance of $11 million, $10,991,000.
Oh. Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, I can't answer that question at this time. I'm sorry.
So Mr. Chairman, what we have in front of us then is an attempt, because Senator Roebling, I understand what you're trying to do, to say, okay, we have this unencumbered balance. Then as you worked through the bill, realized that there was the potential, because management budget might not necessarily, under the language of your original bill, might not have gone after the tuition reimbursement, the state grant program, and so on, flood relief, disaster relief. So there was no requirement in your bill. There was not a mandate that they go after those funds. But you wanted to make sure that there was no opportunity to do so. So I'm inquiring about the remainder of the corrections budget as to what that might be used for. Because, Mr. Chairman, I will tell you that how many times did I hear a lecture in this committee or in my office from Governor Pawlenty's administration about the unwise effort at any point for any dollar to touch the corrections budget? Concern about riots in prisons, overtime for correction guards, food for inmates, possibility of a federal lawsuit. And that's why I'm inquiring as to what the potential might be with the rest of that money still on that list for corrections.
Senator Roebling?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, it will be something that will be thoroughly vetted and looked at. And I'm not saying that this is the only money that the agency may be able to come up with. We know, for example, that there have been a number of early retirements. People were offered early retirement packages. A number of people, state employees, took those early retirements. And that can result in savings in those departments if they weren't replaced, and a lot of them were not. And then we also have people who left just natural attrition. And because we've had a soft hiring freeze, many of those people were not replaced. So there's potentially other money out there besides what is on this list that is unencumbered. We believe that there may be some in the agencies that can be found yet, and we just want to make sure that we are going to be looking for it. We're not necessarily saying we're going to cut another $11 million out of corrections.
Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the reasons this place is so much fun. In court, I would object to the witness being non-responsive to the answer, and Mr. Chairman, you'd sustain me because it would be a very easy legal objection, but we don't do that here. So let me take a run at it again, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling. I understand what you're saying, but I'm asking for some specificity relative to corrections, not kind of the generic, there were early retirements. Mr. Turner wasn't sure, and that's my concern. We were lectured repeatedly, and I believe rightfully so, by Governor Pawlenty and his Department of Corrections, if there are efforts made, and they tend to be more on the Senate side than the House side, relative to the corrections budget. And I was asked and was able to specify, where we did have some cuts, what the intent was, what the particular line items were within corrections. Governor Pawlenty told me directly of his concern with what we were doing with law enforcement and corrections in the state when we had some of the same problems. And we were able to answer with some specificity, to be honest, that was not satisfactory to Governor Pawlenty nor to the minority then in the Senate. And so that's why I'm inquiring as to what potentially could be done with the Department of Corrections. And I'm not hearing the answer. I don't know, Madam Chair, or Ms. Chairman, Senator Roebling, if prior to this bill being taken up on the floor, somebody wants to provide the answer to me as to what that's going to be. But normally in the Finance Committee, we try to have the answers to these things before the bills hit the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Senator Cohen, we will find out and get an answer for you. But again, we are not ordering that they make cuts in that particular area. We are not saying which things in the corrections budget would have to be cut. Obviously, MMB would work with the Department of Corrections to find out if there are areas that would be available, where there would still be funds available for this fiscal year. And that's what we're asking them to do. But I will get some details on that.
Senator Roebling, if anyone from the department is here, would you like them to try to address this at this time, or do you want to move on?
If there's someone here from Corrections, I don't know that they came in today.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if Mr. Bielek is here. Oh, there's Mr. Bielek. I don't know. Mr. Bielek, are you able to take a crack at that, or is that unfair?
Senator?
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Charlie Bielek. I'm the team leader for budget planning at Minnesota Management and Budget. With regard to this portion of the bill, what we did provide to legislative fiscal staffs is a complete listing by appropriation account of all unexpended balances. I think the discussion as is occurring now highlights the difficulty that we have in addressing the specifics of what this would mean. We cannot identify, for example, of the uncommitted balances exactly what their intended purpose is. Department of Corrections that you've been discussing or other agencies, while money is sitting out there as an unobligated balance either for operating costs or grants, we have not been able to quickly identify the designated purposes of all that money. What that would require is a fairly extensive discussion with state agencies as to the implications of those reductions. I would just highlight for you that when we did unallotments in 2003, that was a very time-consuming process, and to do this properly would require amount of time and coordination with MMB and state agencies to identify the impact of taking any of those unobligated balances. In several other departments besides the Department of Corrections, one example might be the Department of Revenue, which has money unobligated, for example, for seasonal workers that it hires this time of year. So every dollar has an intended purpose. However, it would take a rather substantial amount of time to address every agency and every unobligated balance.
Well,
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm relatively displeased with the answer to the extent that, Senator Roebling, I guess walking into the committee, I accepted your legislation at face value and thought there was a little bit more foresight put into it. But now listening to what Mr. Bielek is suggesting, relative, and I know we've gone through this with unallotments and we've done this in previous years where it is difficult to try to pin down what's needed or not needed out of an agency. But I thought rather than take kind of, you know, the political flashpoints, tuition reimbursement and state grants and so on, that there was a little bit of more foresight put into this because now I'm starting to think, I kind of, the corrections piece grabbed me because that was a place where $12 million was excluded. I wondered, okay, what's not excluded? Now Mr. Bielek's testimony raises other concerns. He mentioned Department of Revenue. What about the DNR? Is some of the unencumbered money going to be utilized for park cleanup and opening the parks for the summer? Or do citizens, and maybe, you know, Park Service is not an essential service and not something, given the budget crisis, we ought to be concerned about. But does that mean folks who maybe can't afford to take out-of-state trips this year want to be satisfied with a trip to a state park for a weekend or a few days, find themselves in some park that's just, to be honest, is a mess? I don't know, but it sounds like you don't know. And it sounds like, I don't know if your division chairman know. In fact, Senator Ingebrigtsen is here. Maybe relative to the DNR, he could answer that. But I'm a little bit concerned when I hear Mr. Bielek's testimony saying, we don't know. We haven't had a chance.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Senator Cohen. We have a $30.5 billion general fund budget. And we are asking, with 5 months remaining in the fiscal cycle, for them to find $125 million. And we think it's possible. We think that there can be every rock overturned and look for some money that is not expended, that might not need to be expended before the end of the year. Yes, there may be some time that has to go into this, but we think that with a $30.5 billion budget, that it isn't too much to ask for something to fall to the bottom line at the end of the fiscal cycle, and that we can capture that and that it not all go and be spent. We've heard of, you know, the Christmas in June mentality where, gosh, we have to spend our budget because if there's anything left, they'll reduce it for the next cycle. We don't want that to happen. And this is still flexible. We have 5 months. We're going to be here for 4 months of that time. If they can't find it, we'll have to make adjustments, but we're asking them to please go out and look for this money.
Well, and Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
Senator Roebling, I appreciate the lecture, and I don't disagree with that. I understand you have a strong belief. earlier in my life, I believed in green men on Mars, but I could never prove it. And so I'm just suggesting that that was much earlier in my life. So I'm just suggesting that if we're trying to deal with some specificity as to where this can work or cannot work, because I happen to agree with you. I think there are places where it can be done. But I think the unintended consequences of passage of legislation where we're not quite sure. I mean, you mentioned Christmas in June. I guess that's going to go down as one of the legislative catchphrases that we often use around this place. Because I read that Christmas in June meant, I think I saw something in a newspaper or something, that one definition was that there was a plenty agency that went out and spent bought 40 extra chairs and some computers. you know, the difficulty, and I'm as guilty as anybody, the difficulty in arguing from the particular to the general is it's real easy to do that. And that's why I have to go back to where I started this line of questioning relative to the Department of Corrections, because I can just tell you, Governor Pawlenty was all over us. Waves of corrections people would come into my office. It was a nice office across the hall, as a matter of fact. Waves of people would come into my office with charts, spreadsheets, whatever, explaining why we couldn't do it and what the consequences would be, either in terms of potential federal lawsuits in joining the state of Minnesota, potential prison riots, consequences to the safety of the correctional officers, and I heard it over and over again. So that's why I started with that. Mr. Bielek's testimony then kind of triggered my thinking in terms of some of the other unintended consequences. But shouldn't we be concerned about unintended consequences? Isn't that what the legislature is supposed to do?
Senator Ingebrigtsen has a comment, but before we get to that, Senator Cohen, by definition, in giving the department some flexibility in finding the most appropriate place to get to this funding, and that's, I believe, the author's intent here is to give them flexibility. By definition, there will be some uncertainty, but what, at least my understanding of the testimony and reading through the bill, the intent of the author is to put some trust in our professionals that they can find those areas that will be the least detrimental, the least likely to, just a moment, Senator Cohen, let me finish, least likely to result in lawsuits and do the best job we can, the best job they can, in an environment that is particularly difficult for everybody in talking about a relatively small percentage of the budget. I'll give you a moment, Senator Cohen, but Senator Ingebrigtsen has been patiently waiting to get back to your point, I believe maybe to the DNR.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, you know, several points. Number one, Christmas in June. I come from county government, and I really have to commend Senator Roebling for being bold enough to step up and find these pockets of money. I know for a fact that and I'm not going to say that I participated in that, but I know a lot of departments did participate in, well, you better spend your money, Sheriff, or you better spend your money, County Engineer. You're not going to get it next year. You're not going to get that amount. And that's been going on, as Senator Roebling said, for a long time, and I suspect in state government as well. To Senator Cohen's point, I think we're getting into a tad bit of micromanaging here, and I don't think that we in this body have the time for that, frankly. I'd be more than happy to entertain those questions about the DNR if you come to my committee, Senator Cohen, but I also bring a little history here with regards to the previous administration saying that one of the areas that weren't going to get cut was public safety, and I think Senator Cohen remembers that very well. He was very adamant about that. However, I guess where I'm going with this is maybe Mr. Turner can give me some idea as to how much the public safety budget was cut 2 years previous to this, when actually Governor Pawlenty did not want it cut.
Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, last year the public safety Department of Corrections was cut by $8.9 million. And the year before that, in the 2009 session, I think it was about $15 million. However, there was a problem in that that still exists to this day, in that the institutions division was funded with $38 million in federal funds, and we only carried over $13 million in tails for the 2012-13 biennium. So the Department of Corrections faces a tails shortage in this coming biennium of $26 million.
Thank you for that. So I guess I make my point, Senator Cohen. You know, I really appreciate your willingness to step up for the Department of Corrections now. I just don't know that it was very that much serious back then, as serious as you are now. So, again, I think we're getting into micromanaging here. We're talking about things that chairs of those committees could be answering, and be more than happy to entertain those questions in my committee with regards to the cuts. And I know I'm going to be getting some cuts. We've already talked about that. So,
Senator Cohen,
that'll be for another day.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I guess I try to learn from my mistakes. That's all I can say. And you know, 1 year to the next, we're that much wiser. I know Senator Langseth is the wisest person here. Well, Senator Berglund's also pretty wise. But I learned, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, in all seriousness, we did learn during the finance process, and we learned in some detail. And that's why we backed off from a lot of what was proposed, if not everything, but from where things originated, we backed off. But let me, Mr. Chairman, if I might, address your general comment. And Senator Roebling, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I look at the spreadsheet that we have the budget amount, we have the encumbered amount, we have the expended amount, and then we have the balance left over, which is $194 million. We have excluded from that $194 million, $84 million for the reasons specified. That leaves $110 million to fit into the $125 million. So, Mr. Chairman, there's no discretion left. It's everything. And that's why I wonder about unintended consequences. This would suggest that there is no discretion to reach the $125 million figure, but to exclude all the $11 million from corrections. And unless I'm misreading the spreadsheet, it would seem that we don't have discretion whatsoever.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to echo Senator Ingebrigtsen's comment. Senator Cohen, as we don't, in your profession as an attorney, you're a professional. The folks, the commissioners that work for our state are professionals. They're the ones that we're challenging to come up with this money. We're not telling them. We're challenging them. Is there a way? They are the professionals. For us to sit here and try to micromanage and pull out answers from Senator Roebling, who is not in charge of each one of these departments and the day-in, day-out management, I think it's ludicrous for us to think that any one of us in that position could pull out, yes, we're going to get rid of 15 packages of paper clips, and yes, we're going to make sure we don't do the laundry. I mean, our challenge here is not to micromanage. Ours is to say, let's see if there's something that we can pull out, and let's let those professional people in that department tell us what it is. And at that point, if we like it or not, we can make a decision. But for us to sit here and ask questions that can't be answered because those department heads aren't here is, to me, a little waste of time for what we're trying to accomplish.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perry, a couple of comments, and this is becoming a little bit more surreal. The agency heads aren't here, so that makes me a little bit more fearful of what we're doing. One particular comment, one general comment, Senator Perry, you and I have a shared interest in zero-based budgeting. As I indicated in your committee a couple of days ago, when I was first a finance chairman, I broke down many of the major agencies within the budget and did a zero-based budgeting. That's the definition of micromanaging, is zero-based budgeting. But maybe, Mr. Chairman, I could direct the question to Senator Roebling, because I hear we have all this discretion, and now I'm concerned. Let's just focus on, well, let me ask in a general sense. Senator Roebling, do you disagree with my assertion, as I understand the spreadsheet, that to achieve the $125 million required amount, that it'll require using all of the unexpended balances now left, which only total $210 million?
Senator Mr. Roebling? Chair, and Senator Cohen, I don't I don't agree that we will have to use all of these. These are areas, bigger areas, that the departments can look at. But there are other things that may not have happened yet. They probably have money in budgets for supplies. They have money for salaries that aren't going to be expended. We know that there should be other areas. These are major things that they've been able to extract in a relatively short period of time, and I appreciate their effort to pull this list together for us, because we were trying to set an amount that was possibly doable. We needed something to work off of, and we wanted to look for some of these bigger items. We believe there's a lot of smaller things, and they can add up very quickly because there's many agencies that can make contributions. But we wanted to know for sure that there were some major things that were still out there. And I think that they have everything to look at that's left, and they're certainly out of that $30.5 billion budget, and with, you know, one-fourth of it almost left, the time left, it is not all expended besides $194 million. There is still money there to be spent.
Mr. Chairman, one last question, and I'll drop this.
Senator Cohen, yes.
You're pleased I'm dropping this, right?
I was prepared to move on, yes.
Very quickly, then. Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, as I look at the spreadsheet that you've had distributed, we have $904 million that's been expended. So we can't look back at that, can we?
904. Right. That's gone.
That's gone. And then we have $774 million that's encumbered. Can we look at that?
Senator Roebling?
If it's encumbered?
I don't know. Perhaps we can. Some of it may not be spent.
Okay.
You know, maybe they're planning on bids, and the bids might come in lower than they expect. We don't know that for sure.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, that's my point. Thank you.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. I have several questions, and I'd rather have them answered here if we can rather than ask them on the floor, because I think it's important to vet this bill well. We all know we're going to have cuts. There's no doubt about that. But I have a couple of concerns. And Senator Perry, we had a good presentation in your committee the other day about the importance of outcome-based budgeting from Beltrami County. And I really agree with that whole idea of outcome-based budgeting. I don't think we have a clue with this bill right now, at least I don't, about what the outcome is going to be of the different cuts that we're proposing in here. And I don't know how things are done in the Senate so well yet, but I do know that in the House, whenever we got a bill like this, we would get the implications on the property taxes in our particular districts and cities and counties. And I don't see a run here, and that concerns me greatly, because I'm concerned about the huge property tax increases that this bill could mean to my cities and my seven cities and my two counties. And I definitely want to see that before I made a decision on how I would vote on this bill. Another thing that concerns me is that this bill hasn't been well vetted, and it wasn't. I am on state government finance, and this bill addresses issues in state government. I am on judiciary, and this bill addresses corrections. And we did not have a hearing on this bill in either one of those committees. And I really depend on people coming from the departments and also from the public to ask us questions and make comments about how this is going to impact them. As I said, I know we're going to need to have cuts, but I'm very concerned about just randomly throwing cuts out there and what the outcomes are going to be without at least having a good idea. So I guess a couple of questions that I'd have here. And I do want to know, with every bill that comes before us, every proposal, what the job increases or job cuts are going to be. I don't care if it's government jobs or private jobs, because it all affects the economy of Minnesota. So I'd like to know what the cuts or increases in jobs are going to be. And I'd also like to know, as we're taking money away from counties and cities, are we reducing the mandates in any way? And I don't see anything in here that reduces any mandates that the counties and the cities are going to have to still comply with that are statutory mandates. So I'd like to know, before this bill comes to the floor, what mandates we're asking. We're saying you can reduce if, as long as you're not getting these this funding. On the renter's credit, I have numerous elderly people in my district that depend on the renter's credit refund and are living on a low amount of Social Security. And the last time this was proposed when I was in the House, that there were cuts proposed, there was an outpouring of anger and fear from people in my district about what that was going to mean to their ability to get their eyeglasses once a year or special shoes or whatever needs they met that they didn't have other money for. So the renter's credit refund is also a concern. The thing that I haven't seen, and maybe you can tell me, is are the business tax cuts in here? And if so, what is the amount of that?
And Senator Roebling, before you answer, Senator Olson, you had something to that point.
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, and perhaps Senator Roebling has the response to this. The renter's credit, I believe that adjustment to 15% was based on the fact that that isn't an entitlement. It was meant to reimburse them for the share of the property tax that they pay, and that the calculation of the property taxes was the, and that share was the rationale for putting it at 15%, not just trying to take money away from the renters. It wasn't intended that they be reimbursed for more than they were paying in property tax. And I could you clarify for me if that isn't the basis for the 15% in the first place, rather than having this being essentially an extra little welfare program or entitlement on top of what the intent of that program was.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Olson, Senator Goodwin. Senator Olson is exactly correct. The Department of Revenue undertook a study a couple of years ago to determine really what would be the accurate percent for the renter's refund. And statewide, they found out that the percent was 14.1%. In Minneapolis, it was the highest, and that was 15%, which is how this number was originally chosen last year, I understand, when this was originally put in place and voted upon by the legislature. In St. Paul, it was 12.6%. In the other four county metro, it was 14.4%. And in the non-metro, it was 13.6%. So it went to the highest one, and so there's a potential that some of the other ones perhaps aren't even at that level and are getting a greater refund than the percent of property taxes that they pay in their rent. And so we think this is just based on facts and that it isn't supposed to be anything other than a refund for the property taxes paid, and it is not supposed to be an assistance program for anyone. I know a lot of people do use it that way because it's a lump sum payment that comes to them, and they can use it for a variety of one-time major expenses, but it is supposed to be based on the reality of the property taxes they pay in their rent.
And my question, Mr. Chair, was... what about the business tax cuts? Are they in this bill, and how much are they? what does that amount to?
Senator Roebling?
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, they are not in this bill.
They're not in this bill.
As far as the runs, you asked about the runs. We did pass those out yesterday in the tax committee. We do have them available. I don't know if we have copies for everyone, but there are several copies if you'd like to look at that. Mandate reductions is another area that you mentioned, and we are planning mandate reductions. They're not in this bill. They're not right now in this immediate continuation of our budget reductions from last year bill, but we are definitely looking at them. Senator Perry was nodding his head. All of our chairs are looking for ways to reduce mandates on local units of government, and we'll be putting together a package of those, working with the local units of government, the cities and the counties, finding out which mandates are most difficult for them to manage and trying to lift those. I'm trying to remember if there was another area that you mentioned, but we we are trying to get this out the door now just as a start for our budget reductions. There is a lot of other work that can be done this session that is planned to be done relating to policy. And, you know, we'll certainly appreciate your input. And I understand that this is new to you because these are reductions that have been passed by the legislature before, but you were one of the few members on this committee who was not here to vote on those. And so I understand your concerns.
And Senator Anderson to
Thank
that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, on the point, going back to the renter's credit, I just wanted to respond to that because I think those percentages, I understand what you're, you know, how they were arrived at, but this bill and other cuts to local government aids, we know, will result in property tax increases. So even if the rates don't change for landlords, the amount that they pay will, and that will be passed on to renters. And so those percentages don't remain static. As we increase property taxes by our actions, then renters will pay more, and the percent that they're paying as property taxes will rise. So that's not something that is carved in stone forever. And so it really should be when our actions cause property tax increases, we should respond to that by protecting renters from the impacts because they'll get a double whammy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, certainly we will have to do future studies on this and determine if the rate is still correct. There is a little room for most of our communities. As I said, non-metro was 13.6% the last time it was reviewed, and St. Paul was 12.6. So there's a little growth room in there right now, but it will have to be reviewed again.
Members, we do have some individuals that would like to testify. Right now I have Senator Berglund and Senator Ingebrigtsen that have requested some comments here. So I'm going to get to those. And Senator Perry, I can put you on that list, but we would like to make sure that we maintain time for testimony. If at all possible, it would be nice not to have to be back here tonight, but we do have time scheduled for that, I believe, if we need to. Senator Berglund.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think that Mr. Albrecht misstated one of the questions that he answered for us. I'd like him to have a chance to correct that for the record.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Albrecht.
Senator Berglund and members of the committee, I guess I didn't understand Senator Berglund's question about the reduction to the Emergency General Assistance and Emergency Minnesota Supplemental Aid amounts. The answer that I gave was relative to the overall appropriation. Senator Berglund was asking a more specific question about the portion of that appropriation for those two programs. And the amount that is being reduced is 66% of the current level funding for the emergency GA and emergency MSA.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, you know, as far as I can tell, the Child and Community Services grants and the emergency general assistance and MSA are on this list for one reason and one reason only. Because the federal government believed in a recession that they should be providing more assistance to state and local governments in the area of homelessness and in the area of child out-of-home placement. That doesn't mean that it's a good place for us to start when we're cutting budgets. In fact, I heard a lot of rhetoric about the priorities that the majority would have in the Senate when they looked at cutting budgets. They said they would be trying to protect children and they would be trying to protect disabled and elderly. These two cuts are cutting all of those groups. General assistance, emergency assistance goes to disabled people who are homeless and are in the process of trying to get on Social Security disability. MSA goes to very low-income seniors who otherwise don't have enough income to live on. And the Child and Community Services Assistance Grants goes to serve children who are in need either because of abuse or because of mental health needs that otherwise would not be met. So I find this to be very upsetting. These percentages, 22 and 66%, are much higher than the percent of the deficit that we face, which is about 16%. And so I hardly think that these particular budget reductions are protecting groups of people that we have traditionally protected and that the majority in the Senate has said would be their priority.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And Senator Berglund, I appreciate your comments on this, and I also understand that these are almost safety, some of these programs are like safety nets to safety nets. I guess that we have to look at where we are compared to other states and what their programming is. And I know that this is difficult, and it's difficult for me to do, to bring these cuts forward. And I know it was difficult for you last year, even though you had knowledge that there would be some federal backfill. And we're pretty certain that that's not going to be available this year. We're not positive, but it is unlikely. So these are difficult, and I do acknowledge that. And we will be looking at more areas. These are just the first ones, but there certainly will be additional cuts made.
But Mr. Chairman, the problem is that this is being done in isolation. So we don't know what the other cuts will be. We don't know that the other cuts might be smaller in other areas that maybe we would consider less important than these areas. So I really object to this being done at this time. If it needed to be done in a later budget when we could see how it fits in with the bigger picture, it might be more appropriate, but I really object to it being done at this time.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to back up to one of Senator Goodwin's. Mm-hmm. I'll be real quickly here with regards to local government aid and property taxes. I think Senator Anderson mentioned that. For the last 3-4 years, we've been looking at reductions in budgets. I guess that's no secret. And what's been thrown around by the local units of government are fire and police, and now I'm guessing renter's credit is going to be thrown into that mix as a rhetoric state of the day. Frankly, folks, we don't have a whole lot to say about what property taxes are raised. That's up to the counties. And if the counties thought this year that their local government aid was going to be returned to them, because I understand it was promised by somebody, I'm not sure who that was, this bill looks at a flat base for local government aid, the same as the last 2 years. If they would have been putting that into their budget and figuring that into their budget, they're very poor at figuring their budgets. They should not have been doing that. So if counties and cities have to be part of this mix as well, not just the state of Minnesota. So if property taxes go up, it's going to be part and parcel probably because of the funding. But if that's the case, the counties and the cities have to step up as well and say, where are we going to do our drastic cuts that we're trying to do today? They really do.
Mr.
We're going to hear
Chair.
A lot about that.
Mr.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. Chair, you know, we had a governor in the past that told the majority in the past that he didn't want a piecemeal budget. And at that time, I understood that because you have to know what all the pieces of the puzzle are to know whether or not you're for or against something. And it's sort of following up on Senator Berglund. I wouldn't have any problem with this simply being a proposal brought before this committee with an idea that this is probably going to be part of it in the end. But to send it to the governor as a bill, I think, is kind of flying in the face of what you normally do and having all the pieces of the puzzle come together towards the end. So it could be that most or all of this is going to end up in the final piece of the puzzle. That's very possible. But I don't think it should be passed now, sent to the governor, because we know what the result is going to be. If we had done it to Plenty, the result would have been the same. He simply said that was not the way to do it. You had to get the whole budget and all the pieces together. And I agreed with him then, and I still think that it's a bad idea to just take part of it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Senator Langseth, and I remember those discussions from previous years. It seems that governors always want it all together, and majority parties would rather bring it in pieces, as the majority party last year did when Governor Pawlenty was criticizing it. You know, I would prefer that route probably too, but we really are facing a historic deficit. And I have real concerns, and I want to get the message out. either to the agencies, for example, with the $125 million proposed cut. To bring that up in January makes so much more sense than to bring it in May. To talk about the LGA cuts now so that the cities and the counties are aware of it makes so much more sense when they have 11 months left of their budget year rather than 7 months. And we're trying to move this forward so that it's as easy on the various entities that are affected as it possibly can be. And, you know, maybe this bill won't get signed into law. I don't know. But I think it's important that they know that in the end, these probably will all be in. And if we have this discussion now, they can at least plan accordingly. I would like to see it signed into law, but I think that it's just a courtesy for us to give them a heads up in these areas where we really believe cuts will have to be made. Cuts that we don't necessarily want to make, but we have to make with a $6.2 billion deficit. And I know that we have a number of people here that have signed up to testify, not a long, long list, because a lot of people know. They know that things are going to have to be cut. They understand that they've dealt with these in the past. They know how it works. They've lived under them for a time. And yet I know that not everybody's happy with them, that's for sure. I'm not happy with them myself. But one thing, before we have testimony, one of the issues yesterday in the Tax Committee was a concern about how the LGA language in here affects the city of Houston. They had a little special exemption because of the size of their population going above 1,000 and dipping below 1,000, and it was moving back and forth, and they kind of fell in between the cracks somehow. And we had some special legislation for them, which the current language would exempt, and I would like to put it back in with the A4 amendment.
So Senator Roebling moves the A4 amendment. While that's being handed out, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and if I just wanted to finish the discussion here that we were having briefly on property taxes, because, you know, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I agree with you on one thing, and that is that our city should not have counted on no cuts, no more cuts to LGA. I mean, that would be foolish to expect that things wouldn't change or get worse, unfortunately. On the other hand, you know, you're from local government, you're a sheriff, you understand what it's like, and that our cities and our counties, you know, I live in St. Paul, have, you know, they froze pay, they cut staff, they cut pay long before we talked about doing that here at the state level. They've cut so much, and if your sheriff's department was being told, well, you have to cut 20% of your budget because of what the state has done, I think you would understand what they're facing. And frankly, in our city, just as an example, you know, our snowplow budget was used up before the new year. And, you know, what are we supposed to do? Are we just supposed to not plow the streets? I think you guys would have some objections about that, being that you spent a lot of months of the year up here, and my constituents certainly do. So, you know, there's essential things that cities have to provide. And we're talking about the impacts of our budget. We just can't pretend it's not going to increase property taxes around the state, and it wouldn't be responsible for cities to just cut that much more. And I don't want property taxes to go up, but that's what the impact of these cuts will be. And we just need to be realistic about that. The other thing I just wanted to point out is, you know, in terms of the process, I think I understand the dialogue about piecemeal versus the big picture budget. But as a former budget chair, I think it was very different what we did last year. What we did was divide the budget into three different areas and said, we're going to do the first round of cuts. We're going to set a budget target for everyone so we know what the whole budget picture is. And we're going to say this much is going to be cut from these state agency areas. And we're going to, so I had a budget target. I had to cut my 7% from all the areas of energy and environment and natural resources. And each other area knew how much they had to cut. And then we sent that bill to the governor. And my bill was signed, actually. And I'm really proud of that. It was a bipartisan bill, and it was signed as a separate bill before the rest of the budget was done, because what we did is said, here's this part of the budget, we're going to get this done, and we're not going to come back to it later. we're gonna do Health and Human Services, and that was sent to the governor, and then we're gonna do Education, and we divided it into pieces, but we didn't say, oh, we're gonna cut everything now, and then we're gonna come back and cut everything again, and then we're gonna come back and cut everything again, and we don't have a big picture of what the total cuts are gonna be, and we don't know what the impacts are, and that it's just disturbing me. And Madam Chair, I respect you. I think you're a fair and thoughtful leader. And so I don't mean this as a personal comment, but I am very frustrated that it seems that the budget divisions aren't examining these cuts. And there's no sign to me that they're going to even find out what the impacts of these cuts are before we go on to the next round. And so that's why the big picture matters. Because if you just cut some now and cut some more later and cut some more later, is anyone counting the total? And is anyone predicting what the total cuts will be in different areas and prioritizing? That's why we were elected, to prioritize and to set outcomes and priorities for the public. That's why we're here, not just to let the state agency folks decide. We're supposed to make those decisions. So enough said.
Sure. And Senator Anderson, I remember some years back serving in this body in a previous term when the majority never did set budget targets. I think at one point we finally did get an informal memo. So there's lots of ways things are done down here from time to time to time. Unless you had a comment to that point, Senator Roebling, Senator Bonhoff's been patiently waiting.
Just a quick response, Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson. And I am running a total in my head. I do know, but in a lot of ways what we're doing today is it should be flattering to the former majority, because we are picking up on the proposals that you had to cut. And because we've had them in place before, except for where the federal stimulus money backfilled, we pretty much know the outcomes of what those cuts mean. And so I think that we didn't have to have really extensive hearings on those, because those outcomes are pretty well known, and we've done it before, and we're trying to do it again. And I guess we will have much more in-depth hearings on additional bills, and I think that you'll be happy with the total, but we needed to start somewhere, and this is a good place for us to start with things that have already been done and already have known outcomes.
I'm sorry, Senator Bonhoff. I'm going to try your patience here. We have the A4 amendment before us. Let's deal with that before we get to you. Senator Roebling, do you need to do any more explanation on the A4?
Mr. Chair, it really is just to help the city of Houston continue with that special adjustment that they had back. I don't know if it was in 2010 or 2009 that it was put in place, but probably Senator Erickson Ropes brought this forward for her community, and we want to continue it.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the A4? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment A4 is adopted. Senator Bonhoff, thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. I had, over the course of the interim, been speaking to constituents and saying whenever I talked about the budget that we would need to use a balanced approach, and that I would start by talking about some things we did last year. And one was the shift, and I said I objected to not putting it in place in law the way that we normally do shifts, where there's a method for paying it back, and it would be when the reserves were at a certain amount, and conforming with how we've done it before. And so I pretty much just take that right off the top of the overall number. And then I said, and also the cuts that we, or the unallotments that we ratified, they were very painful. And so I did tell my community that was how I was going to approach the budget. And then I said, and then we go from there and we do a balanced approach. The one exception that I have with that, and so I do reserve the right to not approve this entire piece, is the piece that Senator Berglund was talking about, because I promised every time, including yesterday when I spoke at that rally, that I would hold harmless children, particularly those with disabilities. And so I did vote for that last year, but I did vote for it knowing that there was the federal dollars. And I just think, you know, maybe Senator Han in that committee, you will all come up with a way where it really won't
be harmful because we'll find flexibilities and then I'll support it. But I do want to honor that promise to them. And so while I can understand your process, and I've always respected you as a legislator and I've worked closely with you, that's the one piece I, as of yet, cannot support.
Thank you.
Okay, we have, if we can move on to testimony now, Patricia Caldwell and Mary Regan. You're presenting together, I believe. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Patricia Caldwell, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I also have John Dinsmore here from Otter Tail County, who can answer any specific questions that you might have. I'm going to be pretty brief. I know that you've talked about a lot of the things that I was preparing to address, so I'll just kind of highlight a few things. As you know, counties administer programs on behalf of the state, and the Association of Minnesota Counties represents all 87 Minnesota counties. Want to say that I recognize that this is a really difficult budget year for you, that you're going to make difficult choices. We recognize that counties will have cuts, and they will have cuts in the area of health and human services. We accept that. We think that our responsibility is to make sure that those cuts are proportionate, I guess I'd say, to cuts in other areas, and also to let you know a little bit about the effect of the reductions that you make on the programs that counties administer. I did have a letter submitted to you, and that was before we had seen this in gross version, so we do appreciate that there is some recognition that there were federal dollars that influenced the reductions last year, and so the reductions are lessened. However, there are some areas where there still are some pretty significant reductions. The Children's and Community Services Act, which Senator Berglund mentioned, was one area. Just want to talk about EGA, EMSA. Those are funds, as was mentioned here, that were used for very low-income people, for emergency situations, adults, things like utility shutoffs, that kind of thing. There is no real county requirement that those services continue to be provided, so if the funds are significantly reduced or eliminated, counties will probably not be providing those services. In some parts of the state, particularly the metro, I think that could result in increased homelessness, perhaps increased jail costs, that kind of thing. In some parts of the state, counties may backfill that with local property taxes, which would mean probably an increase in property taxes. The child support was addressed in this area, but if you'd like more information at a later time, or perhaps through Senator Hand's committee, we could give you some information about counties' role in administering those programs and also the effect that that has on MFIP and other programs. I think that Mary Regan can speak about this in a little bit more detail, and perhaps Mr. Dinsmore too, but the Children's and Community Services Act is the only source of state dollars that's available for child protection, vulnerable adult protection, and it's also used for some mental health services as well. There are some federal dollars, and there's a significant amount, I believe over 50% of the total amount of money that's spent on that child protection area comes from local property taxes. As Senator Bonhoeff was talking about, the CCSA block grant is a pretty flexible dollar amount. I think there's a requirement that 40% of it be used for children's services. Many counties spend more than that on child protection services out of this block grant. However, there are other statutory requirements around child maltreatment, responding to abuse and neglect, that kind of thing. If these reductions do go forward, or if they're considered in another bill down the road, we would like to have a conversation with the committee about what kinds of things you would like counties not to do in this area, since we do administer this program on your behalf. For example, would we not be required to, or would it not be the expectation of the state that we respond to child maltreatment investigations within 24 hours? Would be one example. I don't think that I'm going to make any more comments except to say, even though I don't think it's addressed in this part of the budget bill, I want you to be aware that county program aid was also reduced in this overall budget by $32 million, and that obviously some of those dollars do go to the health and human services area as well as some of the other public safety and snow removal and the kinds of things that were discussed. And it's true that counties have tended to not build that into their base budget in the future, for future years, because the funding has increased and decreased and been up and down so much over the past. I think one thing that we would ask for in the future is just a little bit more stability in the budgeting process, to the extent that you can do that, because it is easier to communicate effectively with citizens about what they're going to be getting for their dollars and what their property taxes might be. I guess with that, I'll just ask if there are any questions and ask Mr. Dinsmore if there's other things that he would like to add.
Mr. Dinsmore?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Dinsmore, I serve as the Director of Otter Tail County Human Services in west central Minnesota. And we are a county of that's considered, I think, the 13th largest, but geographically much bigger than that. And I want to first let you know and remind, if you don't already, and some have alluded to this already, that county governments, and ours in particular, has made a good faith effort in already trying to manage these budget challenges that all of us in the public sector have been dealing with these past 3 years. Much to my protest, our county board instituted a hiring freeze the past 2.5 years, and it hit us the hardest. As you know, both at the state level and the county level, human services tends to be the larger department. We have lost 15 staff, and for us that's 13.5% of our workforce. In addition to that, we've also made challenges with all of our contracted services, so we've held our contracts to 0% increase these past 2 years. And I say that all when and kind of setting the context and looking at the proposals that Senator Roebling has brought forth. And I realize that in the long run, you're going to want us to have the big picture and see what the big picture looks like. But a couple of comments from the county level. When I look at the emergency GA and emergency MSA, that these are programs that we have allocations for those. They're relatively small amounts. I realize that in the grand scheme of things, these aren't a large amount of dollars. And yet I'm reminded of a phrase that many of us probably have grown up with, what you've done to the least of my brethren. And I think that's one of the charges that we have at county government, to serve those that are the most vulnerable, disabled, the elderly, children. The dollars that we use to those emergency services, for example, these first 6 months of this year, we've expended 70% of those dollars already, and the average amount that's given to clients in need is about $430. And these are for individuals that, because of the programs and the eligibility, these are the poorest of the poor. $203 a month is what people on GA are living on, and I'm sure you are aware of that. And for MSA, not much more than that. And so when all is said and done, I guess I would probably advocate that even though we acknowledge that we have to tighten the belt and make some changes to preserve and to protect those that are most vulnerable. As far as the CCSA dollars are concerned, the other thing that I'd like to ask people to be mindful of is when counties get those dollars and we combine them with our local levy dollars and some federal dollars, most of those funds, in the case of our county, are not kept by us as the county. We contract those out. In fact, in our department, 75% of what we receive, we contract out with a local mental health center, with Lutheran Social Services to do intensive in-home services, school-based services. A lot of it is for mental health as well as for child protection and child welfare. But I do want to point that out, as some of our county commissioners have reminded me, we have some programs and some funds that can serve as an economic generator. Let's use those in that manner. And even though these are public dollars, and I think the perception out there is that a lot of those dollars are kept by the county to pay for their staff, the contrary is true. In our case, $3 out of $4 are contracted out to provide those funding and services to people and programs that we think can do a better job of serving people in need. And those are my comments.
Thank you, sir. And members and those in the audience, those that are on the testifier list here, we do have some flexibility. We're not 10:01, so we're over a lot of time. We have a little bit of flexibility, but if we're able to wrap up testimony and get to a vote, we can finish this morning. Otherwise, we will be back here tonight after supper.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Anderson.
Just a question from Ms. Caldwell. You said something about how the state has an expectation of replying or responding to a call on child maltreatment, child abuse within 24 hours. Is that a requirement?
I believe so.
So you said that expectation might not be met. I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. It would or wouldn't, or what happens if it's not met?
Well,
Ms. Caldwell.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson. I guess in the first place, I believe that a child would be at greater risk of abuse if maltreatment isn't investigated as soon as possible.
I guess the other thing would be that the county would be out of compliance unless that statute is changed. So I think a couple of things could happen. One is counties are less able to respond to the more acute situations. Another thing that might happen is they'd be required to divert property tax dollars from other sources or increase property taxes in order to be able to do that. Or they may not work with the families as much on some of the earlier prevention kinds of things, directing them to parenting or helping to keep families together in order to respond to that particular mandate. So I guess that's the kind of discussion that we'd like to have over the course of the next legislative session, is how would we collectively as government units like to respond to that challenge.
Okay, and we next on the list for testifying, we have Sue Abderholden. Oh, Mary Regan, I'm sorry. You can certainly both come to the table. And please state your name for the record. And if you're able to keep it brief so we can get to a vote, that would be wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mary Regan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council of Child Caring Agencies, co-convener of Youth Moving Forward, and co-convener of the Child Wellbeing Network. I do have a handout. If that could be distributed, that would be great.
Can you leave on me? You bet.
I'm here to talk about the Children and Community Services Act, which was created by the legislature in 2003 by combining 15 different children and adult grants. At that point in time, $50 million was cut from Children's Services. And further cuts have been made, as you've heard, including the temporary reduction last year, which was at least partially balanced by increased federal dollars. Today, the fund has a total of $63.8 million per year in base funding, which is allocated according to a formula to counties to serve a target population. And that target population is children, adolescents, and adults who experience dependency, abuse, neglect, poverty, disability, and chronic health conditions. So there is some flexibility built into this about for counties, and you've heard how one county spends the money. In reality, though, when you look over the whole state, the majority of the dollars are spent on child protection to intervene and investigate allegations of abuse and neglect. These are the only state dollars in Minnesota's child protection system. And we are at the bottom of the country in terms of state dollar funding for child protection. In this proposal as amended, the CCSA grant is reduced by 21% or $13.6 million. Investigating allegations of abuse and neglect is a core function of government. No other sector of our society, not faith organizations, nonprofits, businesses, or any other entity can take on this essential task. There's been discussion about the outcomes of cuts. According to the Department of Human Services, the number of child fatalities or near fatalities has been rising since 2004. Between 2004 and the end of 2009, 89 children died and 180 suffered life-threatening injuries as a result of abuse and neglect. In 2009 alone, Minnesota counties and two tribes assessed 17,218 reports of maltreatment involving 24,499 children. This is the number of reports that was accepted. Every county has a screening process where they decide which calls that they get from daycare providers, neighbors, teachers, police officers will be accepted for an investigation. Some advocates, notably the citizens advocacy group Safe Passages, are concerned about the growing gap between the number of calls and the number of reports that are actually investigated. There's concern that as funding declines, the bar is being raised for what will be investigated. As a provider organization for services for children, many of whom have histories of abuse and neglect, we're so concerned about the declining funding available to counties for child protection that we've been working on a proposal to dedicate all of the CCSA dollars to child protection, even though this would result in fewer mental health dollars to support our members' services. Children who survive chronic abuse and neglect come to see the world as a hostile place and can develop patterns of abusive behaviors as a coping mechanism. They populate our prisons and are overrepresented in many other costly service areas, For example, civilly committed sex offenders who cannot be released. From a report from Every Child Matters, when provided with support services and appropriate supervision, the vast majority of potentially abusive and neglectful parents can learn to safely care for their children. And many abused children who get help are resilient enough to overcome their history. But for many, the outcome is predictable. When childhood goes wrong, adulthood goes wrong. And the sad story of abuse, including death, repeats itself from one generation of troubled families to the next. We recognize the budget challenges you have and know that counties are also facing deficits that are forcing them to make difficult decisions about their ability to even respond to core child safety and well-being interventions. This is not an area where we can afford to do less with less. Please reconsider your decision to vote on this bill today. Please don't let your very first vote in this committee be to cut the only state dollars dedicated to intervening in child abuse and neglect. The message that these core government functions and these most vulnerable children are a priority and that these dollars will continue to be dedicated is important. Thank you.
Thank you. And Sue Abderholden, are you able to keep your comments about 4 or 5 minutes?
Mr. Chairman, Sue Abderholden, Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. I'll talk really fast. I just echo what Mary Regan has said. We know that kids who have been abused or neglected do end up in either the children's mental health system or the juvenile justice system. The ACE program in Ramsey County that deals with kids under the age of 10 who've come to the attention of police due to their behaviors, 95% of those children had been abused or neglected and then need intensive services in order to turn their lives around. While 16% of the CCSA funds go to children's mental health and 6% go to adult, I know that might not seem very much, but knowing how fragile our mental health system is, it really does make a difference. Each county varies in terms of what they spend their dollars on, but we know that they fund things like crisis homes, community support programs, drop-in centers, supports for families who have adopted children with intensive mental health needs, and most importantly, actually medication and treatment for children and adults who are either uninsured or underinsured. NAMI is concerned that this is kind of being taken out of context. Last year, you know, you passed the GAMC bill kind of earlier before all the other ones. There was about $11 million cut from adult mental health services. I have to tell you that I had to keep reminding everyone when the next, you know, round of cuts came to say we got our cuts that first round. And frankly, a lot of people had kind of forgotten about that. I'm worried about how this comes into context with everything else. The personal care assistant changes happen on July 1st. Most of the people who are going to be cut are children with mental health needs. If there's changes to the Minnesota Care Program, we're going to have more folks who are underinsured and not able to access mental health services. We're already losing mental health providers of armed services and children's therapeutic services and supports. So I would urge you not to support this bill at this time. We really need to look at how this would impact our mental health system, which is already, frankly, extremely fragile. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Cohen, you wanted to make a couple brief comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'll be very brief, and just want to point out, we don't have amendments to the bill today. We're not trying to stop this. But I want to follow up just quickly with what Senator Langseth and Senator Anderson suggested, and that's relative to whether this is a complete bill or not. Senator Ingebrigtsen, you indicated earlier that I was being a little bit inconsistent from last year, and I have to admit there is at times a surreal aspect to this place. I've often thought that if he was still living, some of you know I like film, a Robert Altman film about a state legislature would have been a great movie. And I think this is an example of that. Senator Anderson and Senator Berglund will confirm that when we had partial budget solutions, privately, I was not enthused about that. I obviously offered that. There were internal discussions. I lost some of those arguments. I was backed up in that, I might add, Mr. Chairman, by Senator Roebling. Just two quotes. Senator Roebling on March 22nd last year on the Senate floor in favor of a Republican amendment to the Senate DFL bill. Quote, what we have now before us is a complete budget, and it addresses each part of the state budget, not just the part we were looking at in Senator Cohen's bill. The most important thing, members, is that it is a complete budget. And on May 16th, Senator Roebling, I cannot in good conscience support the bill in its present form. I was wishing we would have a complete budget solution right now. It's just not balanced in an appropriate way. Senator Roebling, you were right last year. Sorry, things have changed.
Senator Robley, hopefully we can move quickly to a vote.
Did you notice May 16th? I mean, it was like a couple days before adjournment. We are trying to do things a little differently around here this year, and that's all I'm going to say right now because I don't know if we have to adjourn or if we're going to.
Well, Senator Rubling, if you'd like to move your bill, we could probably get right to a vote.
Do we have other people to testify on the list or not?
I have all three testifiers that have spoken.
Oh. Well, Mr. Chair, then I would move that Senate File 60 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor.
Mr. Chairman?
Just a moment, Senator Berglund. Senator Rubling, that would be Senate File, what's the number, 60?
Yes.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recorded as voting against these very egregious cuts to children and disabled people and elderly, so I'd like a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Okay. A roll call has been requested. Prepared to call the roll?
Yep. Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Berglund?
No.
Senator Bonhoff?
No.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Nienau?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
And Senator Roebling?
Yes.
There being 9 votes in favor and 6 against, the motion prevails. The bill is passed as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
There being no other business before the committee, this committee is adjourned.
That was mean of you. Point out consistencies.
No, you know, we could have gone on and on and on forever here.
I just wanted to point out
the renter protection.
I just wanted to talk about corrections.
These are tough decisions.
Not as much as what we had talked about originally, though. Kind of spam on that.
Yeah.
Well,
okay. Right. And you get the luxury of doing that.
All I asked is, what's in it?
No, I wouldn't.
That's a good answer. So I had something else, other than my inconsistencies. So you're in charge of a
local government aid. Or you're driving. That's a difference.
Exactly.
You should turn back there.
Me? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Like, where am I going now?
I told
one. I'm telling him. Say this straight up. If you guys budgeted, to get your money back.
I've said the same thing to St. Paul folks, but Chris Collins understood that had a realistic approach. He's not happy about it, but he's had a realistic approach. I've never told the St. Paul folks, next year, hold on. I never said that. I didn't.
Shame on him. I shouldn't be good.
I'm not
shaming them.
Well, I think, did they pick up from the campaign? I'm trying to remember what Dayton said about LGA. I don't think anybody said they. The question was, remember what we did last year is we passed, when the Brayton case was decided, and it said the governor acted inappropriately relative to the allotments. And everybody's really excited. I said, this decision is a Pyrrhic victory. Important victory in terms of the relationship between executive and legislative, but it's going to create a lot of problems for us in the next 10 days. And I was actually surprised because I thought
the Supreme Court would not, knowing what would happen, wouldn't have a ruling of that magnitude in a legislative session. So I was a little bit surprised. And to be honest, Peter Watson had said at the outset.